And welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. This is Nick.
And Janelle.
I want to thank you for tuning in for another podcast of Beyond the Vow. We hope that wherever you are, you're having a wonderful day. You've had a wonderful week. And we hope that you have a wonderful weekend as well. We haven't been into too much since our last podcast. Just kind of the normal coming and goings that we would normally get involved in. Did I say normal twice? Maybe I did.
Well, it's normal coming and going that we normally get into.
Yeah, I use
it. It's true.
I'm using normal too much, I think.
At least it's normal.
It's normal. Today was one of those days where it was kind of a bear. There was a certification that I had to do that was work-based. And finally got that done, and that devoured most of my day. And by the time you're done with that, I don't know, it's hard to describe. You're relieved, and then you can't believe you're done with it. You're happy that you're done with it because it just feels like a cinder block hanging over your head, and it's just there. And you just got to get rid of it. And good grief, that was.
Well, do you remember when I came down after I passed my LSW exam? Because I came to you. I went to my parents' house to celebrate with them, and then I came down to visit you that weekend. I literally cried from the time that I passed until I think I called you right away after I got done with it, too. You were on the call with another person, so I had to kind of wait around.
Was it when I was working?
Work.
I was working. Okay, that would make sense.
And then I think I cried all the way to my parents' house. And then all the way to your house, and then I couldn't stop crying the rest of the night.
Well, let's be clear, you did pass it, though.
I did pass it.
That was the whole thing.
You were happy you passed it.
Yeah, and it's just stuff like that, like, and everybody out there can identify with that. It's either been like a massive, you've had this final that's been a bear when you're in college, or you've had this project at work, or whatever the case may be. And it's just something so, it feels insurmountable. And then you get so used to that hanging around your neck that when you're done with it, it's almost like you don't know what to do with yourself. Like that added stress is just gone. You feel so much better. Now I'm trying to get accustomed to not worrying about it anymore. Like it's done. Mm-hmm. So that that was really nice to kind of be done with. And then you've got the rest of your week, like, to kind of get back into normal.
Friday evening is your favorite day ever.
It is. And I've got a project I've got out for the garage. I've got some organizational stuff that I want to do in there and kind of change it around. I've got a toolbox. Any of you ever been to Harbor Freight? It's not Snap-on brand. It's general something. U.S. General. Maybe that's, I forget the term.
General Sews.
It's the Harbor Freight brand or whatever it is, but it's bought one of the green tall tool chests or whatever things. It's on wheels. It's the not the big wide one, but it's a taller one, and a little bit more narrow. And that's out in my building. And so whenever I'm working on the truck or doing anything like that vehicle related, all my tools are out there. I thought I'll put them out there in the building. And I never realized it'd be really nice if they're out here, because when I used to do stuff on the car, if there was something I didn't really know, I would have a computer sitting right there. I could watch a YouTube video. And I mean, hey, I am a YouTube mechanic. That's where I learned a lot of my stuff from. That's how I did a lot of it.
I mean, and outside of putting a garage door type thing on the back of the shed and pouring a pad out there in the easement.
Yeah, nah, I don't want to do that.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It's simpler to bring your tool chest up.
Yeah, so I want to organize things in there a little bit, because it can go there, and I'm tired of stepping over the treadmill to get to all my car wash material and my air compressor and my drills and batteries and things. And so I just want to kind of get that out of the way and organize it just a little bit better. So that's my project.
I'm pretty sure there are boxes out there that I still had from Indiana. And if 3 years later we haven't needed
really,
that stuff, yeah. I'm probably going to donate it.
I don't know exactly what all that would be, but we'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll figure it out. So
I have a new little friend.
You do?
I do.
All right.
Nick bought me this chopper. Mm-hmm. And this is from
Star Wars Rebels.
Yes. Okay. Love that little series. And this little Chopper, and Chopper is a little droid who is always angry.
He's got a lot of personality.
He does. And I got him, and he does things.
He pushes his little head. He gets praised. He just always, he always sounds stressed and upset. But here's what's so funny, is whenever she turns that on, yeah, he makes a lot of weird noise, but she'll turn that on. And not necessarily Mika, but Kaiser will hear that. Oh, my word. He'll come streaking down the hallway. He wants it so bad. And so we'll do ping pong. I have this little book. It's a little Star Wars book. We found at Ollie's. And it's got little buttons for like little robots. It's all robots. And so each robot, you all remember the little books we used to get that were picture books, but you'd read the story, and when it came to a certain picture, you'd push that picture on the right side of the book, and it would make that sound. And so these are the robots, and so they'll all make those sounds, like the battle droids and R2-D2. And
Roger, Roger.
Yeah, and all that stuff. So Kaiser would run down the hallway towards Janelle's office when he'd hear Chopper, and then I would push the button on that little book back there, and he'd come streaking back. And he was going back and forth, and because he was so stressed out because he couldn't figure out where it's all coming from. Mika's just standing there minding her own business, and he does a drive-by on her. He just bites her right in the side and just runs right by. He just goes,
he did.
And not hard, but he's like, Arr. He's so upset and so frustrated, he's just bitter.
She deserves it.
Yeah, she is. She's... Her name shouldn't be Mika. It should be Karen. That's why.
I mean, she was answering to Karen for a while.
She was. That's really sad, though. Anyway. So, you know, in the past, we've always talked about some of these heavier topics that we do. This we've sat on for a few months, I think.
A few weeks.
Well,
did I do this before the cruise?
I did. Oh, my. Yes, you have. So this we've kind of sat on. And there's some things that have taken place, you know, that we've heard of recently, and just the general goings on in the CHM. And for those of you that are not aware, it's the Conservative Holiness Movement, and it's basically this movement that's out of it's Wesley Armenian at its core, and that's what we grew up in, was in those churches that preached the teachings and believed in the teachings of John Wesley. And there's different denominations that make up the CHM. You've got Midwest Pilgrim, you've got Bible Methodist, you've got
New York Pilgrim,
ICHA, you've got God's Missionary. Bible Missionary is really not... I mean, technically, I guess they would be part.
There's just a whole bunch of them.
But they are just really, really, they are really staunch, ultra conservative.
And I found out that the Mennonites probably should be in the CHM as
well.
I'm kidding. Well,
let me tell you, when I was at GBS, I remember Mennonites coming to visit. And I don't know if there was a Mennonite, like if there was a girl or a boy who went to GBS that were Mennonite. But I remember they would come to campus. So, I mean, that's a possibility.
This is a very...
We're going off on a rabbit trail. Yeah.
We'll do a short little rabbit trail.
Okay.
We were watching horse auction on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And noticing the difference between the Amish and the Mennonite.
Right.
So then it's really hard to distinguish. Except... Mennonites, their men generally wear denim jeans instead of like the broadcloth trousers that mm-hmm. the Amish do. So we were just kind of noticing some of the differences, and then we were like, I wonder what they believe. Looked it up, and it's a pretty, like,
it's
Jesus,
close.
The Bible. It's
yeah,
like,
it's close.
So it's.
Now, what's interesting though is I know people in the holiness movement who have deep respect for the Amish. And there's an older gentleman I know of who actually will go up to Amish women. And when he sees them, he's like, oh, thank you so much for upholding the standards and all this other stuff that he might say. And little does he realize
a lot of pretty brutal.
This is my understanding. They don't share our belief like we think they do. Their view of Jesus and the Bible is drastically different. And many people within their order have been thrown out and shunned for simply believing a different way than what their fathers have taught, which is Jesus. There's also a lot of things involving almost like occultic that tends to go through there. And people tend to look at the Amish and be just because they're dressed, it does not mean they're Christian.
Well, that's a perfect segue.
It is. And let me just give one more thing.
Okay.
What is the name of that series on YouTube that we watched?
Breaking the Silence?
Breaking the Silence. I highly recommend you all go to YouTube, type in Breaking the Silence, and you'll find a video series on YouTube that's probably about 5 videos long, maybe. And there's a gentleman who is out of the Amish, and they reenact a lot of it, but they give you the history of the Amish. They tell you what they believe in, the things they've done. They've got people that got saved, came out of it because they were shunned when they got saved and were going to church. And they're now pastors and they're preaching. A lot of it's around Central Ohio. Highly recommend you go find that, called Breaking the Silence.
I think YouTube, Hulu, or Amazon also picked that up and ran it and are streaming it.
It is.
I can't remember which one.
So good. So good, but it will really open your eyes to the difference in the Amish. And you know, when you go to the Amish, you think, oh, they're good, holy Christian people. Not exactly as you would think.
Yeah,
they can
be pretty brutal.
They are quite different. They have a reputation around, at least that I understand, for being very cruel. I know a lady who I was talking to. They're all on horses, and she said there, I believe, was a farrier or a vet went to go look at a horse for the Amish, and he said there was a dog that was out there. I said, like, the adults kicked the dog, the kids kicked the dog. He said even the young toddler walked over and kicked the dog.
Poor dog.
You know, and it's like there is, and not all of them, I will say, are going to be right. Yeah. There are some Amish and that are very kind to their animals, but they're, for the most part,
their animals are not pets. They're there to do a job.
And to get that animal to do that job, they will break them.
Yeah.
And in spirit and in body, if need be, to get them where they need to be, and then they'll use them. But anyway, go out there and watch that series, Breaking the Silence. You will not regret it. It's fantastic. Just the struggles that people in the Amish community face when they become saved, because then they do get shunned for that.
Yeah.
So if you get shunned for worshiping Jesus Christ, then the people shunning you, they are not of the same cloth. They are not. They believe in something different, but their forefathers, the teachings of their forefathers matter to them more than the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that is sad. Anyway, that was a little bit of a spiel.
That was a little bit of a rabbit trail.
So this might be a longer one, folks. So we hope you put your seatbelt on, get you a coffee. If you're driving somewhere, you might have to pick it up after you get out of work, you know, because it's, you know, who knows how long this is going to go.
And I'm going to say, if you let your little kids watch, this is probably not a topic for little bitty ones to be listening to.
I don't, should I, I don't know if I'll label it with explicit content. I don't know if it's really going there.
No, it's not explicit content, but depending on what you want, we're very open and we talk about sex frequently on this podcast. So this is just another, a little more sex talk.
The sexualization of
the men in the CHM.
And this is something that Janelle had really felt that she wanted to share, and we've sat on it for a good long time. And so today's that day.
Today's the day.
So we're going to get into this, and I don't know if I'll break this into two parts. We'll just see how long it goes, and we're just going to hit it right off the bat.
We can motor on through.
All right. So you want to lead us off?
Yeah. Okay. So starting out, so that we can understand the development of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So in lifespan, so children start to recognize the difference between men and women normally around age 3 and 4. Age 5 and 5 to 8, they're starting to ask questions about changes in their body, things that they're seeing, and it's generally after the age of 12 that those sexual feelings begin. But little boys within the church movement are taught to notice these sexual attributes of the opposite sex well before 12 and older.
And we will be focusing on the conservative holiness movement with this.
Because, and I'm sure there are other churches that do that, but CHM is where we grew up.
Right, and this is what we've observed.
So so that is a little bit about the lifespan. Had a friend whose little girl, you know, when you're younger and your kids are little, she would throw her daughter in with daddy to get showered. She would get ready. Dad would wash her, throw her back out, and mommy would go and dress her.
Mm-hmm.
Then in kindergarten, so she's right in that like four or five years.
Right.
She went and drew daddy.
Oh, dear.
So then that's when you know
they've reached this age that
you've reached the age where you're not just seeing a mommy and a daddy. You're mm-hmm. noticing the difference between mommy and daddy.
Right.
And then you make those adjustments in your home as necessary. So she was no longer allowed to go in the shower with daddy. And she was never, like, that was a boundary that became established once she started to notice. Mm-hmm. Boys, I think, are pushed there a little sooner in the CHM because parents teach their children to focus on the outward dress like from a very young age.
Right, right.
So, boys become hypersexualized. Mm-hmm. So this is where boys are conditioned to notice that girls are wearing what they're wearing to see if they are modest. So you see a woman, you're automatically hitting all those spots because you have to see if they're dressed modestly.
Right. And it's been our experience that much of the enforcement of the dress standard, if you will, comes from the men within the holiness movement.
And I'm not saying to go out there and oogle people.
No.
This is just, I feel like we're taught to see the dress.
Right.
Instead of the person.
Right. There is a bit of a glaring problem in the CHM from this, and we hear about it from stories that people share, from different things we'll hear, and it keeps coming up, and it happens in churches, it happens to people, and it's all got a root somewhere, and that's where all this comes from.
I feel like
that's where this comes in.
On the flip side of telling a boy to notice what a girl's wearing and not to look, you're also, that's the next part. You're also told not to look. Mm-hmm. So you're told to look, but then don't look.
Right.
So, you know, lest you fall into temptation and have those unclean thoughts about that opposite sex. Mm-hmm. So right there, you have a war between looking and not looking, checking to make sure that girl is dressed appropriately and not looking.
Yeah, the only reason you're even really laying eyes on somebody is to critique them.
Yeah. And if a girl was immodest, boys were further conditioned to know that they would have impure thoughts and create an issue.
Right.
You were trained that if you see an immodest, you will have an impure thought and then you will be unsaved in now.
Right.
So then this lays the responsibility of the girl for being responsible for the purity of the male for the most part. What you're wearing, and it all comes down to self-control. A big lack of self-control.
But see, that's not something that's really... I can think of how many stories off the top of my head, where men simply in the CHM could not control themselves. And
I'm going to say would not control themselves.
Thank you so much. Let's rephrase that. They would not control themselves. And the female became the scapegoat because mm-hmm. it's her job mm-hmm. to make sure they stay centered. And if the female does anything out of step, then I'm going to share a story of someone that told us this. There was a friend who told us that they were at a Bible college, one of the big threes, one of the ones we know. And there was an individual who was in they were ministerial student, saw them wearing a blouse that had a little tiny little opening at the top near the neck. And something about that little opening, it was not immodest. It was fine. There wasn't a problem at all. But something about that got a hold of this ministerial student. And he was engaged, I believe. Yeah, he was engaged. He comes over to this woman wearing this, who's, you know, a fellow student, and he says, "You shouldn't be wearing something like that. Why are you wearing that?" And this friend of ours said, "What are you talking about?" And he said that. He takes his finger and puts it in the little hole and flips it upward. He said, "I'm talking about that." She said, "Get your hands off me, you pervert."
You know, I know this person, and he's very glad he didn't lose his finger.
And it goes to show that this kind of behavior is out there. It's happening. And these men are going around, and they're basically just, they're not even seeing a woman for what she is.
They're just seeing the dress.
Yes. They're just looking to see if she's toeing the line. Another gentleman, and I was told this by a friend, actually, yeah, very close. It was at the IHC convention, and was sitting there and looking at all the women who came in to see if they had a seam in the back of their hose. Looking at them, and he was marking it down, and he was going to write an article about it. This is, to me, that is the definition of absolute stupidity.
Right, and it's teaching your boys to look and make judgments about modesty, mm-hmm. and about the person.
Mm-hmm.
Both boys and girls are then taught to judge,
right.
based on an appearance. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to say this carefully, because I do believe that there is a sense of modesty and that you should be modest, both in your dress and your deportment.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is also degrees of modesty. I'm going to go to an extreme here. Take a stripper, okay? Modesty to her may be a low-cut blouse and a mini skirt.
Mm-hmm.
So if she comes in her work attire, gets saved, and comes back with a mini skirt and a top on that I may not be comfortable wearing, she is still considerably more modest. And again, I'm going to an extreme here. But if you have someone that is used to
mm-hmm.
showing their body, they may step their modesty up, but it's still not reached that level. They're being more modest. They're trying, but they're still judged.
People like that, I think, the Holy Spirit does a very good job of working on someone to get them where they need to go. And as we said here recently, someone in the CHM told me, how can we expect our people to be able to discern the will of God for themselves? Okay, well, that's generally involving the Holy Spirit in many cases. And you're basically kind of taking away the ability for those people to be able to think and almost learn grow on their own, or to be able to understand the Lord, and you're putting it in the hands of men.
Yeah.
And no wonder we've had so many people from the pulpit literally abuse people and say all kinds of things. They put their personal preferences out there and mix them with biblical doctrine, and we end up with all the wild things that we've had in the CHM.
I mean, there was that, my mom, I think, told this story. There was that, and I don't even know what church it was. There was a lady that came in off the street, very scantily dressed, went to the altar, got saved,
mm-hmm.
came back the next night wearing, I want to say, stirrup pants and something. I mean, super tight things.
But it was better than what she had. Right.
And she was met at the door after the church with an old biddy in the church handing her clothes that were 4X. This apparently was a tiny
they
little person.
They had her go downstairs and change in the basement.
Yes. Yes, because she wasn't. So then she came up looking ridiculous and never came back.
That's one way of destroying and smothering the light that the Holy Spirit ignites in someone, is when you take your own presence and, like a wet blanket, lays on top of it and you douse it. And that has happened so many times. And it is so frustrating.
Yeah.
But people think they know better than God, and they get in the way of the Holy Spirit. Anyway.
So training boys how to notice every detail about a girl.
Yes.
So boys are trained to, and you can speak, you're a boy. you're trained to notice the neckline, make sure there's no cleavage showing.
Right.
Make sure that their knees aren't showing or that they don't have a slit that's too high, that part of their thigh is showing.
Right.
All of these things, or that their clothes aren't too tight, to make sure that their breasts are not pronunciated and out there. So I'm going to tell y'all, I'm a bigger girl up top. There is never any situation where anyone could mistake. Like, it's not something that I can hide. God gave me a well endowance of extra, and other women he didn't. But when you are more well endowed, sometimes you're judged for that because the boys are taught. Make sure that it's not too tight. Make sure you're not seeing anything. Make sure that... So then they have learned at that age to objectify women. And that's what everyone gets so upset. And I'm not, again, not pushing for porn or strippers. But people get... They're objectifying women. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? By noticing every detail and judging every detail of every single woman that walks through the door of a church, a CHM church, you are teaching your men and your little boys to objectify that woman.
Mm-hmm.
Just in an opposite way.
Yeah. It bothers me to the extent that women are kind of put under a microscope, if you will. And there have been people we know of who have gotten into a little bit of trouble because their clothing might have been a little tight up top, and in some situations they just couldn't help it, or maybe something was going on with a skirt or something, or whatever the case may be, and I don't know. It's really frustrating because that should not be. Where there is such a, it's almost like you're just watching, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a bunch of little spotlights out there just looking for anything to cross their path. Right. As soon as they see something, oh, that's wrong, you know, and it may not necessarily be wrong, but to that person, maybe it kind of turns them on. And because of that, I'm ashamed, I'm upset at myself, I'm mad, I got to stop it. So that way it doesn't turn me on. So you change what you're wearing so that way I don't mm-hmm. get turned on.
I mean, sexual purity, outward dress, that has all been elevated to a position above salvation. If we really think about it, how you dress and your sexuality, yep. if you are pure, have been elevated above salvation in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Teens can have poor attitudes. Adults can have poor attitudes and be judgmental, untruthful, and any other type of character flaw. But as long as they're virgins and they dress appropriately, they are not judged as harshly or at
right.
all.
And see, that's one thing that you'll notice. And anyone who's been within the holiness movement for any amount of time, you sit down with them, and they will give you experiences of people who they certainly look the part. They can fit right into the IHC convention, which is going on right now. And they can fit in. They can fit in with any CHM church, and they look the part. But their character underneath the outward uniform, and I'm sorry, is garbage. And it is not saved.
Yeah. So, in our household, we will be teaching our children to see the person instead of the sex object.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we have a little boy, I don't want that little boy, as a teenager, as a man, not being able to witness, be a witness.
Or to even, like, carry on a conversation.
With someone who yeah. may be dressed not as he would have his wife dress or his daughter dress, or that his mother yeah. dresses, but see that person for a creature that is loved by God, no matter how they dress. Yeah. Because if they did get saved, if they are saved, they may be a work in progress with the Holy Spirit. Yeah. You don't know what the Holy Spirit is doing, so keep your trap shut.
You know, the situation I can think of, a friend of ours took their little girl into the bathroom at a restaurant. And while they're in there, a woman came in wearing pants, and the little girl looked at her, and she turned to her mother. She said, "Mommy, is she going to hell?" and said it out loud. And it's like, once again, kids from a young age are being told, kind of like they're being told what to look out for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. So what do children do? They start going around, and of course they're looking at things. Mm-hmm. And oh, I see that. I see that. And well, that matures with them. It's where it's like everybody walks around as a mini police officer.
Yeah.
And they're all going around and they're just looking, and they're all making sure that you conform. You know, and you're fitting the mold, and you're toeing the line, and everything like that. They're not necessarily. They need to be more focused on themselves.
Right.
I think if people within the CHM were more focused on themselves, we probably wouldn't have some of the situations we have going on in there right now.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we intend to let our children naturally learn about the other gender and dress at the age that has already been written into their DNA.
Yeah. We can teach modesty, and we can teach that good Christian morality without objectifying someone and causing that child at an early age to not look at that person for who they are, but instead to be selecting their flaws.
And parents, you'll know.
Yeah.
You will know when your kid is ready to start having those conversations, because the questions will start coming up. Mm-hmm. I remember it. We had been playing outside in the water at my grandma and grandpa's house, and my grandma was an old farm wife. Like, you got in the front yard, she brought towels in. She didn't want the wet in the house, so she had a strip outside. And I don't know if it was me or my brother said people driving by might have thought we were having sex, and my mom was like, "What?" Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that she realized that, okay. These two kids, they're ready to have that conversation. They are age appropriate now because their mind has moved. Mm-hmm. And she got a textbook out and she's like, this goes there. This is a penis. This is a vagina. This goes there. But that is only between a husband and a wife.
Right.
And something to be very enjoyed when you are a wife or a husband.
Right.
So that was the conversation that we grew up. So we started asking questions. I mean, I'm sure we ask questions as younger kids. Are you going to tell your? I mean, I never want our children to not know the proper name for their body parts, because I don't want, if somebody did what mess with my children, and that would be a very dark day for that person. But if they did mess with my kid, I want my kid to be able to tell me in no uncertain terms what was touched and how.
Yeah.
So that is, I think, from a young age, a little girl should know she has a vagina. She should know what her body parts are, and a little boy should know that he has a penis.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people create pet names, and sometimes when something bad's going on and the kids start to use pet names or they use code words, it's hard for even a teacher or anybody to pick up on what truly is happening.
Daddy putting change in my pocketbook. The teacher had no clue.
Yeah. And that's a true story, too.
Yeah, and just because a child starts noticing the differences between genders doesn't mean that they are automatically thinking about sex.
Yeah.
This comes at a later age if you don't push it. Pushing that sexual purity at an early age is going to set your child up for being hypersexualized, because they're going to be looking and they're going to be paying attention. And then they're not going to know what to do with those emotions that are now coming forward because you forced me to look at this.
Right.
Yep. And that would be an example is if you have a little boy and you're out and about and you see something, shielding their eyes or pulling, no, we don't look at that. And I'm not talking about magazines. I'm talking about human beings that are standing and walking in life. That's where I am.
No, I agree.
So when you grow up, I have a theory about this. I have a theory that the teaching of our boys to be hyper-focused on dress and purity goes toward the usage of porn and other sexualized behavior.
Because they have noticed those things. Mm-hmm. And they're so, you know, I'll give you an example. I went to it was actually a Bible missionary church. And I was a kid. And there was some boys that were there. And it was the first time I'd met some of those boys. And I thought, oh, wow, like I was probably middle school, probably. Maybe around middle school. And I was like, oh, okay, hey, people my age or whatever. And so after, it was like a revival meeting or something. And so we all met up outside and I was like, hey, talk to these guys, you know, whatever. And my brother was with me and here's these guys. And they started talking. It was the most crude and explicit stuff I have ever heard. And the one boy was talking about how he had been having sex with his girlfriend and this other, and the color of fluids And I was horrified, as a kid. And because I looked at these kids and here's their parents. Everybody's conservative looking, their holiness. They look, everything looks great. And they got in the parking lot and that's the first thing that popped out of these guys' mouth. And that's all they're talking about. And I was just like, what in the world is happening here? Like you guys, like they're not even in, like maybe they would have been like a freshman or sophomore in high school at best.
Okay,
and so that's going on?
You know why that happens though? Because parents aren't teaching their kids about sex. It's this quiet thing that you shouldn't talk about.
Yeah, everything being discussed was about, it was like this experimentation. And they didn't, these guys were oblivious to some of the stuff. And they were talking about what they had seen, what this was like, what that looked like.
Because kids are going to share, because you're, if you don't learn it at home, you will learn it from your friends.
Yeah, and their experimentation process had gone too far. And they were having a discussion. And there was a discussion that was kind of hush-hush, and everybody was talking about all these this different stuff. And looking back on that, I see a very bad job done by those parents. And probably some of the lack of discussing this with their kids, warning them maybe more, and kind of... I don't know what I'm looking for here.
Training, talking about it. Because okay, kids are naturally curious,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kids, that's how they learn. That's little bitty ones. They're curious about what everything
tests. We're not taking the mystery out of it.
Right. You're keeping it shrouded in this mystery.
Right.
So I've got to figure out what this is. Well, then that figuring out...
That's what gets
goes
people in
too
trouble.
Far yeah. because yeah. then they don't know how to handle these emotions.
Yeah.
And if they would just talk about sex fully and biblically, you know, sex is rarely spoken about, let alone taught by the design that God intended for pleasure as well as procreation. He made sex so that we can become, there's more than one kind of intimacy,
mm-hmm.
but you become very connected to your spouse when you have sex with them.
Right. I mean,
that is what that is created
for. I mean, there's literally a lot in that in scripture, the two shall become one flesh.
One.
I mean, there's a lot of meaning behind that.
It is. And it is some of the most
Adam knew Eve, and everybody goes, you know, the people that are in the know what that is. You
Adam
know?
Enjoyed yeah. Eve.
And some people, I remember talking to somebody, they were like, I literally thought it just meant, oh, she became his friend. It's like, no. It was a little more detailed than hey, you want to be friends? It was a little more detailed than that.
Adam was turned on by Eve, and he liked her. He loved her, and he wanted her.
He's like,
that is how God intended
it. He's like, I've never seen anything like that before.
Woo.
Yep, that was that.
So what happens when these boys become men?
Well, we have a lot of adult problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we're hearing about it. And some of it's unfolding before our very eyes. And a lot of those issues are then popping back up in the kids because the cycle is continuing.
It also affects your marriage. I mean, I'm jumping ahead of myself because this is some things that it can actually do. If a man is not saved or is not living a godly wife, he's going to continue to objectify women, even his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times men are demanding of sex from their wife, no matter what she's in the mood for, no matter what. And I'm not one of these that.
Well, didn't Dr. Dobson teach that a man can't go without sex for 72 hours
that's
and he'll
ridiculous.
Die or something? That's what he said, I think.
But that's ridiculous.
I know, but do you see where people have got this from?
Right. Right. Because again, it is.
Sex has become the fuel for men.
Yes.
It's like it's become the ever, it's almost become like a worship kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to where they have to have it. They're going to pull that chain and they're going to have it whenever they want it. You have to be ready no matter whenever that's going to take place. You know.
And there are some women who freely don't have a problem. Anytime their husband's ready, they're ready for it. There are others that through that toxic purity culture, through maybe some sexual trauma that they've had, and sometimes not being taught about sex or being taught about sex in the wrong way makes them really, really tentative about engaging in sex with their spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes to the point that it gets vaginismosis or something. It's where the vaginal walls actually constrict to the point where if you're engaged, you can't disengage, or or it can't happen because they're so vaginismosis. I can't remember the exact term, but that is, and it all comes from like the mental side of it, because either there's been some sexual trauma as a kid, as an adult, whatever it is, they haven't been taught about it. It's just, I mean, there are some very real ramifications from not discussing things biblically and fully with your kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a man is living a godly life, he may become so burdened by trying not to sin that he's seeking forgiveness if anyone comes across his path that is dressed, that's not dressed modestly. Because he's been conditioned to see the body instead of the person.
Yep. Individual that I know, who their situation was that whenever they were walking in public, and if someone, a woman, was dressed, let's say, even not necessarily inappropriately, let's say the clothing was just somewhat tight and they crossed their path, that person had to ask forgiveness immediately, even though they hadn't sinned. It was just the fact that their eyes caught them for a moment, they had to immediately repent.
So then what happens if that person comes up to you and wanting to talk about Jesus? Like, you're like there, looking down and you're asking for forgiveness.
Can you share the gospel with me? And you're looking at him going, Lord, forgive me, Lord, forgive me.
And I can't even look at you because I'm seeing. Yeah. And that's a direct result of not being taught about sex.
Right. And people think we're making this up, but we're not.
It's not.
It's really out there. It's really happening. Yeah. And it's sad. It's a shame. You know, it's like the holiness movement as a whole for many of their boys, the whole groups, it's like they're all just so turned on, you know, by anything that comes across their pet. Not everybody, but I'm kind of using it's just dramatic. Yeah, everybody's just so turned on, they can't hardly function.
Yeah.
And if you turn them on at all, it's your fault. And yeah. You might as well just, you know, wear a burqa or something like that and cover your head and let nobody, you know, look through them with isolates.
Also,
you
know, I'm going to say this.
In order to keep them right. from sinning.
I'm going to say this carefully. But you know what? God created that reaction between a man and a woman.
See, here's the thing. And can I add here?
Yeah.
You are so right, because God did not make a mistake when he made a woman. Because if a woman was just supposed to be another being, she'd look like a man, but she wasn't. She had curvature. She had symmetry. Lord help me. She was symmetrical, and she had certain features to attract the man. Okay? There is a way that those features can exist modestly. But the conservative holiness movement, not everyone, but a large chunk of it in the teachings that we've heard, has taken those attributes that are God-given to women and demonized them. Mm-hmm. And men have grown up judging women over what God blessed them with.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have chosen this size.
And that is my honest opinion on that. It is that men in the holiness movement, they literally demonize women because of how God designed them. Because it is doing naturally to them what God intended it to do. And now, before somebody says, oh, you're saying we should just go out there and just, you know, whatever. No, I'm not saying that. But just because someone is out there and maybe they're a little more endowed up above, or maybe they're a little curvy in the back, or however it could be, maybe that's the way they were designed. And there's a certain Christian man out there, whoever that's going to be, is going to look at that woman and say, hey, I like that. And guess what? He's going to be attracted to her.
And there's things about men that God created to make attractive to women.
And the thing, here's the thing. But then, because you're not supposed to notice those things. You're not supposed to notice that the woman looks like a woman. You're not supposed to notice that she acts like a woman. But then on your wedding night, you're supposed to notice all those things. But yet you've been completely had that shut off. Mm-hmm. And it's been demonized. And it said it's wrong. It's terrible. You literally have to wear a woman's got to wear and this is what I've heard. How many a lot of the different choirs have mm-hmm. had their members do they'll almost evaluate their clothing to make sure that it's all modest or whatever. And I've heard different people who have said that they've been made to wear several sizes larger.
Bigger because they're...
They're more endowed on top. And it's like, just put a bag of feet over them, why don't you? You know, at some point, they're going to come out there looking like they're wearing a sail from a ship. You know, and I'm sorry, but at some point, you have to realize that people are people. And we can dress modestly, yet... we can be a representation of God's creative nature.
Right.
So, I'm not going out there saying dress super tight or just throw it all off, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that as human beings, we were designed to be attracted to one another. Yet there's not a single thing being done to the men in the CHM to take care of. I knew of a man who was in Bible college who wore women's jeans, because he said it fit him better. And he liked how it made him look and everything. And there are guys that were going around and their jeans were super tight, their pants are super tight, but no one will say a word to them.
No.
But when the girl comes aside, guess what? Your skirt couldn't, at the time, things are different. Maybe now, I don't know. Could not be above the knee. Had to be between the ankle and like where the shin bone was. You could not wear socks. You had to wear hose. Like there were so many different things that were used because, that little 3 inches of the ankle might cause that man to lose himself. And if he goes over that precipice, he'll never come back. You know, and it's like, what is wrong? Oh, don't get me started on the elbows. That's the whole thing behind the short sleeve shirts. I'm taking a dive. Whee, here I go. This is what happens. There was a man, and I know this situation.
I wish you guys could see him like violently shaking his finger at me.
You're not the one doing it, but I'm telling this to you. There was a man, I know of this situation. The man was in a church. And he was upset because this is Holiness Church. He was upset because the women were wearing short sleeve shirts. He got up in the church. He tore into them. And he said, "You women out there wearing your short sleeve shirts." He said, "Don't you know that your elbow looks like a breast?" And told them that. And I'd be looking at him. It's like, dude, shut up and sit down. What is wrong with you? You're basically telling me.
His wife is not shaped well.
No. I'm like, oh, have mercy. That broke it for me. But it's like, what is wrong with you, man? You're just confessing to everybody that you're 3 coins short of a pervert. Like, what's going on with you? If you're that turned on by somebody's elbow, like, bro, what are you doing? What are they doing?
I think it's a misconception that if you see a woman, you're instantly going to be turned on. Go to the beach and people watch. I'm not talking about ogling. I'm talking about people watch. See a person. You know the men that are on the beach?
For some reason, they're not running around grabbing a hold of women and everything. Isn't it amazing? They're somehow keeping their wits to themselves. But you send a holiness man out on the beach, he's going to sit there and throw his Bible down and go, "Come here," and it's over. I mean, that's the idea being pushed.
Yep.
Good grief.
Okay, so how does all of this
affect marriages? No, go ahead. Continue. You're fine.
How does this affect Christian marriages?
Well, there are people that we have known, and it seems to be a sad trend, but there are folks that we have gone to Bible college with, and there's been a lot of divorces.
And I feel like that's because you're not allowed to get to know each other because they're terrified somebody's going to go out and do. They're going to go out and do.
You have to go through the dating rules and you have to sit there and you have to write down. And it's like I was at GBS and sat there and I had to write down. And there was this little paragraph that said, "What do you plan on doing on these dates?" And I just sat there and I remember the guy sitting across from me at the time. I will not give his name. He was a very nice man. He did not agree with the short sleeve rule that GBS had. But because he worked there, he would follow it, but he didn't agree with it. So at least I had a bit of an ally there. But I was talking to him and I was like, "Well, I don't know." I said, "I might put my arm around her or something like that. You know, I don't know." And "Yeah, I'm going to go over there and smooch her over there in the library." No, it's like, what do you expect me to put in this paper, man? But they were so clamping down on trying, like you got, you can't have couples go anywhere. If you're hanging out on campus and you even look like you're a couple, we're going to throw you on dating rules. You and your brother, was that the situation where they were talking? It was somebody else that they were going to throw them on dating rules because the brother and sister were hanging out together. It's like, come on, guys. Like, literally, let's not be stupid.
Let's talk about what my mom would do if they tried to put my brother and I on dating rules.
It is just, there is so much ludicrousy going on. Lunacy, I'll call it lunacy. Ludicrousy, does that even exist? Is that a real word?
It's a new word.
I just created it. You're a linguist. There I am. It is, there is so much crazy stuff going on because of that.
And guys, he's had coffee and he hasn't had coffee in 3 weeks.
Yes, I've had coffee and you can tell. I'm, woo. But it is, there is, there you go. There is so much of this going on to where even Bible colleges try to clamp down on the girls and the guys getting too close together. Let me tell you something from experience. I know that there were certain couples that the rules didn't mean a hill of beans to them. And they would get their sidekicks who would go
most
with them.
Most couples.
And they would let them go do whatever and just kind of leave them alone or hang out. Or people would ride in cars together, get near campus, switch cars, and then keep coming. You know, that stuff happened. The whatever documents that they had to sign didn't mean a hill of beans to them, okay? But what happens is the colleges, for the sake of thinking we have to make sure that we don't have 90 couples and 90 babies happen this semester right on the campus, like they're so worried about it that we have to make sure that everybody's, you know.
You're going to do if you're going to do.
They're going to. I hate to bust somebody's bubble, but they're going to.
If your heart is there.
Yes.
If it's in your heart and if you're going to do if you're going to do. It yes. doesn't matter about the rules.
Yeah. There are some people out there who are very honorable and they have a conscience. And they're like, okay, I signed this. I'm gonna follow. And there's other people like, wait till I get off campus. You know, I mean, like literally.
I would have been that person. I'm signing this for you. But yeah, I signed it for you. I'm gonna go ahead and do
yeah.
what I know I can't. Like, and not going out and having sex. But if I had been a dating person on campus, that document would have been a hill of beans to me. So, back to the Christian marriages and how hypersexualization
yes, please.
Of boys. So wives can still become objectified.
Yes.
So you can still become, and I'm not saying the object of your husband's affection, because you should be that. Objectified is something different. Instead of seeing, being objectified is seeing your wife as an object, as a tool, yeah. and not as a spouse, a helpmeet, a partner, and someone that is walking through life together.
Right.
She is there simply for your pleasure.
Yeah, I think that is, let me tell you something. There are men out there who think that God is going to judge them because of how well they preach, how well they drive the church van, how well they are involved in ministries, how well they organize events and things like that, when behind the scenes, they have failed miserably in one area mm-hmm. with how they treat what God has given them in their wife. And shame on them. I would hate to be in their shoes to stand before, God, look, I did all these things. Yeah, but you failed your family.
Yeah.
You failed your wife.
Yeah.
That was your first calling.
Yeah. So like that objectification, focusing too much on sex. That's the only thing you see when your wife comes into the room. Mm-hmm. And if you're a wife that is okay with that, and that is a part of your sex drive, perfectly fine. If it's the understanding and your husband still treats you like a person on the other side of that, yeah. perfectly fine.
I think that's one area that causes problems is, and this is just in general, people judge with their eyes. Mm-hmm. And they size up a potential mate with their eyes. And they go, oh, that's hot. I've got to get with that. They get married with that person to get with them. Then all of a sudden they find out the personality is
terrible.
And then we start having fights. We start having marital issues and all kinds of stuff. And then it's just all over the place. And I hate to say it, but I really think that that's probably some of the things that have led a little bit to the some of the dating rules, what they've caused. And may not be the issue that caused all of them, but there has been a high number of divorces, yeah. and you've got these people that they were kind of kept apart, And the only way they could get together is just by getting married.
Even in the normal sense, because you weren't allowed to hold hands, you weren't allowed to kiss, you weren't allowed to have that normal affection that's in a dating relationship. You were discouraged from having the conversations about sex while you're dating.
Yeah.
So then in no way, shape, or form were you on the same page at all. You and I, when we were dating, how many times did we have conversations about what our expectations in our bed were?
We talked, and maybe it's going to sound weird to some people, I don't know, but we've been married about 3 years now, almost.
September will be 3 years.
We have never had a fight.
We've had a couple kerfuffles.
We've had kerfuffles. And when I say kerfuffle, it's more like we disagreed over something and then we come to an agreement over whatever. We don't raise our voices. We've never got into it or anything like that. We've prayed over our marriage. We allowed God to lead us into this. When we started this out, we started to talk. We had hours and hours of phone conversations.
27 and a half hours on average per week.
Yes, I lost sleep when I had to work the next day. It was terrible, but it was worth it. We because she's in Indiana and I'm here in Ohio, and we would talk and talk and talk. I mean, we left no stone unturned. We talked about habits. We talked about everything because this is one of the biggest decisions you'll make in your life because it's a
permanent decision.
Yes, it is so huge and you want to get it right. And too many people treat it as like, yeah, let's go out and get it. I can get rid of it, get another one, you know? And it's like, no,
that's not what
it was designed to be.
It's designed to be a partnership and you should be very certain about that decision. So we talked about finances. We talked about how we were raised. We talked about the good, the bad, and the ugly of how we were raised. We talked about finances. We talked about how, I mean, we don't follow this now. We even had set a goal. We had set up, if anything cost over, I think we had said $200, it would have to be a joint decision.
Oh, now I remember that.
Now he remembers that after a couple of guitars.
Whoops. We fell in love with the core of the person, the personality,
the
character.
You did not say the first romantic word to me.
I would not.
For 2 months that we were talking. Right before my birthday was the first time that you sent me a text actually being romantic. And I nearly rear-ended somebody because I read it when I was in the car. But I had already fallen head over heels in love with you. By about day 15, I knew that I was in love with you and I would move for you. And that was significant because I expected God to drop a man right into my house and just add him to my life.
It
didn't quite happen like that. But it was significant because I was leaving behind everything I knew. And I knew at day 15 that you were the one that I would move for.
The reason that I waited so long to even say I love you on the phone.
That was on New Year's Eve or New Year's morning.
Yeah, and it just came out. And I wasn't even planning it. I was at the gas station. And my brother had gotten in the truck. We were heading to work. And you said, all right, goodbye. Something like that. And I think you said, I love you. And then I said, I love you too. And I hung up. I went, oh, I thought, did I just say that?
I put my hand over my face. You had to go to work. I was off.
Yeah, but like, oops.
I still woke up to talk to you. And I was like, oh no, I hope I didn't ruin something. That's my thought.
The reason I held off though is because I wanted to fall in love with you. Because at some point, Lord Terry's, we're going to be in our 60s or 70s and a shadow of what we are now. And you better love that person because if you marry them for the outside, then guess what happens several years down the road?
The outside changes.
And I hope you don't sit there looking for a newer model. But you fall in love with the model that you have and you go, this is what God gave me. This is my best friend. And I couldn't imagine anyone else. And you go through your walk that way. And that's why I think that it's just you get your priorities. You get your priorities in a row. You know what you're doing. And with the Lord's blessing, you can't fail.
And I'm going to tell you, talk about sex. Yeah. Talk about how that person that you are intending to marry, ladies, talk to him about how he was raised around sex. You need to know that. You need to know if it was a sheltered thing. Yeah. Because you need to know what to expect on your wedding night.
Yeah, because then two people with two different, very different expectations all of a sudden end up in the wedding bed that night. And there ain't fireworks. It's a thunderstorm. Right. And things are in the situation you knew of where the one person had been raised extremely conservative, almost that sex was
only for procreation
and it was not for enjoyment. That is what this person was taught. Married a guy who was like, hey man, all the time, let's do it. The two got together and it was a conflict.
It was. And she was so
she's guilt ridden.
Yeah. And that's what it becomes. So it becomes this inner turmoil over having sex with your wife, even though.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to be satisfying for both.
And I think that was a problem with her parents, is that they severely boo-booed. Mm-hmm. But where we did, if you all go back in our podcast, oh my, probably a year or more ago, we covered the books by E.E. Shellhammer and his wife. Mm-hmm. And in those books, we looked at how they spoke about sex. And those books were published at God's Bible School by the Revivalist Press. And those books were distributed and handed out and made their way through the holiness circles. And it's those teachings from those books, we theorize, that a lot of those teachings, because you still see evidence of it around here, still permeates to the modern day.
Yeah.
Still does.
So other places in the sex, in sex in your marriage that can be a turmoil because of the hypersexualization is some curiosities or exploring may not be discussed within the confines of marriage, as either party might feel as though it's sinful to discuss spicing things up. But Hebrews 13:4 speaks about sex within the marriage. The marriage bed should be undefiled. Mm-hmm. The things that defile a marriage bed is the act of stepping outside of the marriage to find sexual gratification or by bringing someone else inside of your marriage.
Yeah.
Other sexual acts, as long as you are consenting, and yes, there is such a thing as marital rape, but as long as you are consenting and comfortable, those sexual acts between one man and one woman are undefiled before God. Your marriage bed cannot be defiled as long as it is you and your husband and there is no abuse taking place.
Yep.
Sexual boundaries and appetites may not be discussed prior to marriage, and on that end, they may be the only thing that a couple discusses, leaving so many things undiscussed. So it's going to be a swing of one or the other. The only thing they can talk about is sex because they're doing what God said and waiting for marriage. But the only thing they can talk about is sex. And then everything else goes untalked about until you get married. And then you have to discuss the finances and you have to learn each other's spending habits and each other's, like, all of that stuff is super important. And sometimes the hypersexualization creates you're only focusing on that. That is the sole purpose that you get married. And that's not how it should be.
Yep.
So we've created several generations that are like this, and then we're working to undo the damage of being hypersexualized. So in your spiritual walk with you and your spouse, you have to work on undoing that damage.
Yeah.
You have to work on seeing that person for that person moving forward. Create young men and women who can see and not notice.
Yeah.
There's a huge difference in seeing and not noticing. When you notice, I guess notice may not even be the correct word either. There's a difference between noticing and not lusting after.
Yeah.
You can notice that, wow, God did a really good job on that person. Doesn't mean I'm going to go have sex with that person or envisioning. Once you start envisioning, I want that person. That's when the issue comes up. So now we have a whole bunch of men who, like your friend, has to look down or pray or seek forgiveness just because somebody walks across their path. I mean, so, you know, seeing, they pass through your view. Noticing or lusting, they become your view.
Yeah.
And the ultimate goal is to create children that move into adulthood with the ability to have a civil conversation, thus showing the love of God through actions and our inner deportment, and to be a witness around those, no matter how they are dressed.
Yeah. I think that that has definitely been a situation that has unfolded within the CHM. And, you know, even speaking from experience, you know, growing up in that, there was a lot of emphasis that was placed on what a person was wearing. You had to be so careful. You know, like, and I was laughing about it earlier, but sleeve length is still a big thing mm-hmm. in the CHM, and was an even bigger thing in the past. And that was something that you couldn't, you know, you noticed that. You noticed if somebody was wearing socks, you noticed that they were wearing hose, you noticed if they had a runner up the back of their hose. You noticed, as the one man did to the person that I know, that they had a quarter size little hole up near their neck, and that was just too much for that person. He even touched that person. They said, you know, get their hand off him. This, there is such a emphasis placed upon, maybe this might be a little drastic sounding, but almost the policing of women mm-hmm. and what they wear, that the women have even lost their identity in some situations within the CHM as to the creation that God has made. And I wish that was not the case, but sadly it is. And we've got too many little boys that are growing up into young men, and they're not seeing women for who they are as God's creation.
They're not being taught sexual control.
They're not.
You can control yourself. You can control your mind.
Right.
Yes, you may have a little erection that happens when you see something that, as long as you don't do anything about it and you remove your mind, because that's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's going to happen if they see something that's attractive.
If somebody walks out in front of you and they're in Walmart and they decided to wear a bikini top and they're wearing short shorts or something or whatever it could be, and they're walking at Walmart, it does not give you a license to stare at them.
Right.
You don't have to go up there and say anything to them. Guess what? You can move about your day and function as you should without allowing that to become something that you obsess over.
But seeing that person as a person instead yeah. of what they're wearing and objectifying them, if you are only seeing what they're wearing, you are making any sort of conversation that you can have as a witness, as helping them, if they ask for a simple question like where this is,
yeah,
and you can't look them in the eye,
yeah,
then you're not
to them
not being a great example
to them. And this is the one thing you have to realize: there are a lot of people out there where normal may not be your normal.
Exactly.
Normal, it may be extremely liberal to what you have been raised to. It doesn't make that a lesser of a person. It doesn't mean that you can sit there and look at this person as there's some kind of trash or whatever it may be, or that you have to say something to them. You can go about your day. You can function without having to become obsessed over it, without having to look at every little person that's coming through and make sure, mm-hmm. you know, like the one gentleman that I knew, he would sit there when his wife went into shop and he would sit there in his car and he would watch as women went into the stores. And if they were wearing a dress, he would go up to them and congratulate and thank them for dressing modestly. And he would just look for those people. He'd follow them in the store and he would talk to them.
It's not creepy at all.
You know, and it's like, you are obsessing at this point, almost to a dangerous level. You are. And at the end of the day, when you stand before God, he's not going to judge you by how many women that you went after because their skirt wasn't long enough, or maybe their top was just not in your liking. He's going to look at you and say, what did you do with Jesus? And then what did you do with your life? What did you do? Not what you did about somebody else, not about what they did to you. What did you do with the talents and the life I gave you in managing yourself? So
here's a big thought.
What's
see
that?
The person. Stop seeing the dress. Stop seeing the or lack of dress.
Yeah.
Stop seeing the. Look at the person for the person.
Yeah. A common thing that has happened within the CHM is crazy, but people getting constantly critiqued or called out because something was wrong with their dress or something's wrong. Remember the situation. This is just kind of going out and giving a little bit of a as to how crazy this is. this is the story, we can edit this out if you like, but this is the story that someone had shared, where the folks had a fish tank, and you told me about this one.
Oh yeah. And you can stay in.
They had a fish tank in the house, and there were lights on the fish tank, but the curtains were closed. Someone from the Holiness Church drove by, saw the glow of the fish tank, and spread the story around in the church that this family had bought a television. And of course, at that point, TV was not to be in the home. And the next thing you know, there's a rumor going around that this family has a television. Can you believe it? They got a TV. No, they had a fish tank. And they went and talked to this person. They said, "What? And why did you do this? You lied about us, started this rumor. We have a fish tank. What is wrong with you?" But see, there is such an obsession with what somebody else is doing. But look in the stinking mirror at yourself. Because we got too many people in the holiness movement who look the part. They dress the part. Oh my goodness. They've got their hair piled up on top of their head. Their skirt's X amount of inches long. They're wearing a nice looking suit. Or the guy's got his hair combed back just right. But inside, they are a sinner. They're not saved.
I think, you know how we were talking about how all four gospels, that sometimes it feels like once you've read one, you've read all of them, but they all leave something out or put something in. Do you know one of the common things between all four gospels?
What?
Is the parable about the beam and the speck in the eye.
Yep.
In all four of them, that appears.
And people don't take that to heart. They sit there and they look at somebody else's life and, well, you're not doing what you should do. What are you supposed to be doing?
Here's my philosophy. Here's what I've lived. I actually had this on, it was a door hanger that I had. And there was one girl that I actually didn't invite back to my house because of how judgmental she was. My home was always a judgment-free zone.
Yeah, can you share that? Is that what you're going to share? That what I think you're going to?
Oh, well, I wasn't going to go that deep, but yeah, I'll share it. So I had a friend. She was a Christian girl. She came to the church. She was going to a secular college for music, but we were kind of the same age. We were both single. So, you know, I was like, okay, I'll make a new friend. Every time I spent time with her, it was so toxic. I felt so dirty after because all she wanted was to talk about other people.
Yeah.
She made a judgment about another friend of mine, saying that he thought he was God's gift to women. And it was not at all that. Like, it wasn't at all that. And so at that point, that was like, okay, I can't. So I cut off friendship with her. Like, I can't, because she told her dad and her, their favorite thing to do on Sunday afternoon was talk about people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is so terrible to me because my philosophy is, until I have to answer before an almighty God for your actions, I do not have the right to judge.
Yep.
I'm going to love you like God commanded me to love you, and I'm going to let the Holy Spirit do the rest. I'm going to live my life as I should, so it is then an example for someone else.
Yep.
But I'm not going to go and say you're wrong unless God tells me to do it. Then he's gone before me and prepared the heart of the other person. But and if that Holy Spirit has not told you to go and tell someone something, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
Let the Holy Spirit do his job.
It's just, I could go on this for so long and just harp on it, but it is a problem. It is a problem. For some reason, where in the world do we get off thinking that it's okay to sit there and critique other people constantly and we're above critiquing? I don't understand that. And I also, and that's another thing that has been a problem even within the CHM, is people love to talk. Yeah. And it has been the Achilles heel of many at a holiness church and holiness family, is the rumor mill and the gossip that likes to fly. We look the part, we dress the part, we go to church when we should on Sunday morning, Sunday afternoons, we get in whatever Wednesdays or whatever the case may be. Maybe we go to a revival service, and that must make us Christian enough, because then we can sit there and crucify you behind your back.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to bring it back to the whole...
That's what I was going to do.
Just with your kids, teach them about sex, no matter how uncomfortable it is.
Teach them, but don't sit there and break it into a situation to where you are teaching them to observe And critique every woman and girl that is out there.
Teach them what God has chosen for them when they are old enough and married. Teach them that. My mom was very open. We had probably one of the most open homes about. We could ask my parents anything. My dad did get a little sheepish if it was girl thing one or two. Yeah. He got really sheepish about it. But we could go to our parents about anything. And we could talk to them about anything and get the truth back. Not watered down.
Right.
Age appropriate, but not watered down. I didn't necessarily need it. My mom still gave it to me. There were two books that she gave to me when we got engaged. One was called Intended for Pleasure. The other one was The Act of Marriage. Mm-hmm. And it was they were written by Christians, and it broke down the sexual response of a woman, the sexual response of a man, because yeah. they're very different. And it takes women a whole lot longer to get where they're going than it does a man. And it broke all these things down. And, you know, that's maybe not something you want to tell your 7-year-old, but you know, right. your 7 or 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old, they're going to find out. So you might as well tell them in a biblical manner.
Yeah.
And if you need help, read Song of Solomon.
Oh, that's something I think a lot of people jump over. You know, that is probably probably the most unpreached book in the Bible.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine anybody? I cannot tell you. I can remember through recent memory, you know, going back 10, 15 years of the sermons that were preached, and I cannot tell you of anything from the Song of Solomon. You know, and there's so much truth to the song. And everybody will tell you, oh, the Song of Solomon has a lot of good things. Yeah, but we just kind of avoid that, you know, for obvious reasons. Excuse me, it is part of the Bible, and there are things to learn from that. And if you want, you probably some good preaching there, too, if you dug into it.
Yeah.
But, man, we don't want to get in there because that's some dirty talk. And, of course, we can't control ourselves, so who knows what would happen, you know? So yeah. it's just...
This boils down, teach your little boys to have self-control.
Self-control is preach self, teach self-control and teach people that it isn't the end of the world if somebody comes across you and maybe they're shaped a little bit more
voluptuous
than maybe somebody else, or maybe their clothing isn't quite right. Your day will be fine. You will survive. Don't sit there and be like, I must go to that person right now and tell them that their short sleeve shirt is too much for me to handle. You know, just no.
If someone came up to you naked and asked you for directions, I expect my child
to look them
in the eyeball and tell them exactly where to go.
I might anchor my eyes to your eyeballs and be looking right through the back of your skull, you know, as I'm giving you this direction. As soon as the directions are over with, I'm changing my direction and I'll probably go my way, you know.
Right. Kind of like my mom when she was calling and that guy
opened the door. Yes, please tell that. Yeah.
So my mom and dad were calling, and dad always, because the church was kind of an inner city area, so not 100% safe, so he always sent couples together. But because my mom is spunky, he would take one side of the street and she would take the other. And she knocked on a door and the door barely opened and guy peeked through. She said he got this weird little grin on his face and then he just opened the door and he was standing there fully naked. She said, I looked him in the eyeballs and I told him, we pastor the church just down the road and we would like to see you come to church.
And you look like somebody needs church.
And she looked him in the eyeballs and said, thank you and have a good day. She did not tell him to come as he was.
Yeah, but you know what? That guy was intending to get a reaction out of her, but because she had self-control, she just sent the girl, oh my goodness. You know, but instead she handed him literature or whatever and invited him to church and then she was gone. You know, and I think that sometimes Satan gets into people like that and they try to get a kick out of it or they really try to scare off people. But of course it backfired to him. And I would like to think he probably felt fairly ashamed. But...
Or very confused about why that didn't work. Huh,
that's really strange. Anyway, I think this is a really good topic, and it could always be gone into again at some point, just with more, even other details and things like that. But the sexualization of the boys in the holiness movement is a real thing. Your young men are being trained to focus so heavily on a woman for what she shouldn't be that in many ways, they miss out on what she is.
They know what she is. Because I can guarantee you that even if they're teaching their sons not to notice what they should not, they're noticing what is underneath as well.
Yeah, because you...
Because they don't know what to do with that. That's where the problem comes
from. Yeah, and you see how that has the adverse effect when it's like you're teaching to critique so hard that by critiquing, it's like there is a focus being drawn to that item. And inadvertently, you may be teaching to avoid that item and critique that item for what it should not be, but you're causing that person to focus on that item even more, mm-hmm. you know, as they critique it.
Right.
And, you know.
It's kind of like when you buy, say, Garvin, mm-hmm. an Odyssey. Now I see all of the Odysseys.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how it goes. It's just, it's a shame. It's a shame. And I wish that the holiness movement kind of handled things a little bit differently with how it brings its children up. And you know what? I would think that maybe over time that this would become less and less of a problem, but older generations have kind of set the playing field. And there are some consequences that have been occurring as a result of this kind of thing.
So until young parents are willing to break that cycle, it will continue to be a cycle. Because unfortunately... You learn how to parent from your parent. And unless you marry a spouse of the opposite, it's just going to continue.
Yeah. I think this has been pretty good. I hope that maybe somebody will take it to heart, or I hope somebody listens and takes it to heart and kind of.
Also, we're not telling your kids to go out and oogle and
no.
And be reasonable about it.
Yeah, if that's what you've pulled from this, then you've made a mistake. That's not our intention at all. Our intention is that there can be self-control taught.
Yes.
Self-control can
Bottom line,
be taught.
Self-control.
Self-control must be taught. People must be responsible for their actions and responsible for themselves. They should not be made to be the police over other people and to sit there critiquing every little bit of every little thing that somebody does. At some point, that is where the Holy Spirit comes into a believer, and the Holy Spirit begins to mold and make somebody. You can get up there and you can preach on different things, you know, preach on people being modest, you know, and or whatever, as time goes on, people are becoming less modest, and there's horrible things that are taking place and things like that. And it is good when you actually have Christians who believe in not showing every part of their body out there, you know, whatever. But just because somebody does cross your path like that doesn't mean that you need to be so obsessed over it.
I think we put them in the unreachable category.
Yeah.
They're not dressed well, so they're not reachable. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to ignore their existence instead of, make eye contact with them and smile.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes a simple smile can change someone's entire life.
Yeah. Yeah, it can. The hypersexualization of our young men and the holiness movement. Young men grow up to be older men, and those older men still notice young women and other women.
Because it has become part of their, what's that word I'm looking for? Programming.
Yes. And that is something that should not be, you know, and that's a shame. And I hope that there are good parents out there within the holiness movement that teach their children to respect the opposite gender and to treat them as they should be, and not objectify them, not demonize them, and not police them in that manner by walking up to somebody saying, that little hole in your blouse near your neck, that should not be, mm-hmm. Do not do that. You know, there's a problem there.
Because you don't know what the Holy Spirit is doing on the other side.
No.
You don't. And that's the bottom line. You don't. We are not called to be the judge, jury, and executioner. We are taught to love other people.
Love other people. Preach the gospel. Preach Jesus. And
be an example.
Right. Preach the repentance of sins. And preach heaven and preach hell. And that's something people don't like to hear. But just as much as there is a heaven, there is a hell. And hell was not designed for people. It was designed for the Satan and his angels and his minions. And you do not want to go to a place that was not designed for humans, but was designed for fallen angels. That would be a horrific place. And I think we need to focus on ourselves. We need to make sure how we measure up to God and where we stand.
Make sure there's not a beam in your eye before you try to pluck a speck. Because if you would pull the beam out, there might not be the speck in the other person.
Yeah, maybe it's a reflection of your beam looking at somebody.
True.
So, yeah.
I think I'm done.
I think we covered a little bit there. But, yeah, let's try to worry about ourselves. Let's worry about ourselves.
And teach our kids to worry about themselves as well.
Yeah.
What to be on the lookout for. That could be landmines later. But not to focus on the outward and not the person.
Yeah. You can still preach, teach good, modest behavior. And yet not be that kind of person who would literally go around and be so dead focused on what the other person is wearing and doing that you can't function and you have to constantly keep other people in line. It's sad. It's ridiculous. And then to some people listening to this, they may be like, man, oh man, like what in the world are you, like, I don't know what you all are talking about. You've had to have been there to understand.
So I'm going to share one more story before we get off of here. We were at SeaWorld. We were little. I think my brother was 7, something like that. So right before you start noticing the differences in the genders, but you're not, you're not focused on the sex part of it. And there was a dive show and the people on the ground had, I don't remember them being like, grossly immodest. They had coconut. It was like a Caribbean theme and they had coconut bras and grass skirts on. And then the divers were coming down and he looked at my mom and said, "Mom, those people need a missionary." My mom just laughed and said, "Yep, they probably do." And that's where it ended.
Yep.
Because they aren't dressed appropriately. Yeah. They aren't.
That's terrible.
That's blah, terrible. Blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. They shouldn't be dressed like that.
You create a hyper focus on that.
Yeah.
To where the kid's like, oh, okay, well, I will watch for it more often. I will look for it.
I will
see where it's at. Then it turns into your congregation. Yeah. I'll look for that person that maybe their top is not as baggy as I think it should be.
Yes.
Or that person whose skirt is maybe just not as baggy as it should be. Or maybe it's a little too high. And you create these people that are so hyperactive that they can't hardly function because they're so focused on stuff when the opposite gender is around them.
Mommy? Those people need a missionary.
They need a missionary. Some people need to be a missionary to themselves.
True.
You know. All right. Is that it?
That's it.
Folks, thanks for joining us for another podcast of Beyond the Vow. And we hope to talk to you later. And we will come at you at another time in the future. Oh, that didn't sound weird now, did it?
Yeah,
I feel like I got derailed for some reason. Oh, well. All right. We'll see y'all later. Bye.